is Richard Lamparski, and my guest today I was personally looking forward to very much because I was a Depression baby, and when I grew up, I used to clap my fat little hands whenever I sat on Saturday or Sunday matinees watching Darla Hood and Our Gang. And for those who want to know right away, how does she look? She's lost all that baby fat, I'm sorry. I can't tell you how many people told me, usually they say, well, get her autograph or get their picture, how they look, but they all said, please pinch Darla Hood.
Well, it's usually my cheek because I still have round, rosy cheeks, if nothing else.
Well, I think I'd have recognized you now.
Really? Many people say that there's not a great facial change, although I hope that I've slimmed down a bit and gotten more mature looking.
Oh, you have. You're very cute, as a matter of fact. How old is your little boy? I heard him playing the piano in the background the other day.
Oh, was he? Well, you're lucky it wasn't the clarinet. That can come out pretty sour. He's 9 and a half.
Just one?
No, I have 3 children. I'm raising my stepdaughter, and she's 17 now. And then my little boy is about 9 and a half, and the little girl's 6 and a half.
Tell them where you live.
She's Darla also. Oh. I live in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey, just over the bridge from New York.
How long have you been over there?
5 years now. You know, actually, I don't really know where I consider my home, because as you know, in show business, especially if you're doing club work or TV, you sort of roam between Hollywood and New York.
And Vegas.
Yes. And I was actually raised in California, but I've been in the East many times, and now I guess we're here pretty permanently, and I love everything about it, but this frigid weather, I just can't take that.
Well, I even like that, because I was compared to that awful, I would call it suicide weather in California, where it's neither hot nor cold. And sunny.
That's true.
And dark.
You don't know how to dress.
It's very depressing. How did you get into Our Gang?
Oh, it's such a weird story. It always sounds to me like something somebody has made up. I was born in a very small little town in Oklahoma, Leedy, Oklahoma, and I think there were 530 people at the time. And I was an only
smaller
child.
Smaller than Gene Autry's? He's from some little teeny town in Oklahoma.
Well, I don't know, but we might have a duel over the smallness, because there's a lot of little towns that produce
people. Is it near Hurrah, Oklahoma?
I don't know where Hurrah is. No, this is north of Elk City, if that means anything to you.
Doesn't mean a thing. I'll tell you who lives in Hurrah, Oklahoma, Tim Holt.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he has a rant there. Go on, though.
That I really don't know. But I was an only child, and I was sort of late in life for my parents, and my mother apparently made up her mind, like 2 minutes after I was born, that I was going to be the ticket out of Leedy, Oklahoma. But she started teaching me to sing and dance almost the same time I learned to talk and walk. And she used to drive me 150 miles to Oklahoma City to take dancing and singing lessons. And of course, this is before I really remember anything. The dancing teacher there, Catherine Duffy, who incidentally lives in New York now, became very fond of me. She had no children. She thought I had potential. And she used to put me in her shows, you know, doing little spots. And finally, she convinced my parents that when she came to New York to get some ideas for choreography, that I should come along because this would be the trip of my life. And I think I was 3 at the time, and I must confess I don't remember too much about the trip. I'm more impressed now with New York than I was then. But anyhow, my mother let me come, and we stayed at the Edison Hotel, and one night the band leader let me get up and lead the band, and I guess I looked like 2 foot nothing of, you know, cuteness or something, waving the baton. And by luck, which, as you know, in show business can be the main thing to get you where you're going, the talent scout from Hal Roach Studios was in New York looking for a little girl to replace the one who had grown up and was really too old to play in the gang. And he said, let's have her screen tested while she's in New York. She looks very cute, and she's young, so they figured the potential of me being in them for a long time. So we did a screen test in New York. And I was signed immediately to a 9-year contract at Hal Roach, and I went right to Hollywood. My mother met me out there. I didn't go back to Oklahoma at all. And then it began the 9-year career. Incidentally, it's kind of a cute story. My father was strictly Midwest, and he wasn't about to take a chance on this show business thing. That just didn't sound like permanent stuff to him. And he used to say, well, there was Shirley Temple, too, you know.
I understand that because I'm from the Midwest.
So he was the president of the bank in Leedy, and he says, well, I'll stay here and work. And he says, you give it a year's try. And, of course, he was driving back and forth all the time to visit, but he wanted to make sure it was going to be a lasting thing. But we ended up permanently. As a matter of fact, my father has passed away since, but my mother is still living within a few blocks of where I was raised in California.
That's funny, you know. I think a lot of people young people don't realize that during the 1930s, and it's one of a picture or play hasn't been made about this, that an awful lot of wives, mothers, took their kids to Hollywood to make them stars. I guess that doesn't happen anymore.
It was an exodus. It was an exodus. And they used to come out to, I know there was one family who really were nothing but extras, but every time they needed extras, you know, on the set they would call them. There were seven children. And the father was still living in Nebraska or someplace, but the mother was out there with the children. This was a way, you know, to earn a living. And a pretty good way, I guess. when you got six children working, I would think so.
Yeah, because times were very, very tough then, but they all thought there was just that one magical chance.
Well, that's true.
To make it. Mm-hmm. Well, now they're all, I'm sure, dying to know where is the people, you know, where are the people you worked with. Tell us first about Spanky.
Oh, about Spanky. He's my little buddy. Well, let's see. First of all, I must mention that when we were working in the gang, the kids got along beautifully. I think the problems more were with the parents, because in television, there are a lot of children working in television. There doesn't seem to be that backstage tenseness and fighting going on between the parents that there were in the movies, because then I guess it was like literally a fight for stardom, and since the children wouldn't fight for themselves because they were too busy playing behind the sets, the parents did it all.
Yes,
so when the gang...
Exactly the
yes, well, that was about the same thing. And when the gang finally finished, I mean, I'm sure that we would have kept in touch with each other, but the parents didn't push it. You know, we sort of just went from the gang to live our own lives. And it was many years before they began running on TV, and then they got us all together for a reunion for a magazine article. And that was the first time that we had, as adults, sat down and said, well, gee, what have you been doing? Where have you been? And at the time, Alfalfa was working in movies, doing parts, and he had decided he didn't want to do comedy anymore. He wanted to be a strict dramatic actor. And he was very frustrated over this. I think eventually that is what led to his death, because he, as you know, about 10 years ago, he had a
pretty sad death. Could you tell briefly what did happen?
Well, he was taken in under the wing, I should say, of Roy Rogers. As I say, Alfalfa kind of got lost for a while, and he was drinking pretty heavy. But Roy and Dale took him in. He lived on the ranch there, and he got interested in hunting. And he borrowed a hunting dog from a friend, and during this hunting trip, the dog got lost. So Alfie put an ad in the paper, $50 reward for return of the dog. And thank goodness somebody found him and sent him back, and Alfalfa gave him the $50. And when he took the dog back to the owner, he felt that the owner should return the $50 to him. And the owner of the dog said, wait a minute, I lent you my dog. If you lost him, you know, it's your responsibility to pay to get it back. And apparently Alfalfa maybe had a couple of drinks and brooded about it, and he came back with a knife, and they had a fight, and the guy shot him. And it was declared self-defense, but it was a shame because he was only in his 30s when he was killed.
Yeah, I remember.
It seemed like such an unimportant thing to have to give up your life for, because he was quite a talented boy. He could have been a very fine actor, I think, if he did, you know, continue. And now with Spanky, as we were just discussing it before the program, I think there's about three or four Spankys in the United States, and everywhere I turn, somebody said, hey, did you know Spanky's in New York? And somebody else would say, no, he's in San Diego. But as best I know, Spanky was acting as MC when they were rerunning our gang on television in Dallas, and then he went to Tulsa, and I understand that he is vice president of an air conditioning firm there. However, since then, you said you'd heard he was one place, and I heard that he was in San Diego selling tacos. But
I heard he was Tasmania.
Oh, no.
No, I read in some film magazine, I can't think of the name of it now, that they did an article on all of you. I think Film Fan Monthly, I think it was.
Really?
Yes, and they said that he was a mining engineer in Tasmania. And then another story I heard, this was about 3 or 4 years ago, during the Seattle Exposition, was that the name of it? That fair they had in Seattle? That somebody had booked, was selling space on the fairgrounds, only they were taking money, and they did not hold a concession for the space, and this was Spanky, too, but this may be one of the many people going around saying that they were Spanky McFarland.
Well, he got into...
Was he still chubby when you saw him?
Yes. Looked much the same, though you would recognize him. And he is taller than you would have thought that he would have been, because I think everybody you know, had made up their mind he was going to be a midget. He's not. He's a short man. But he's not enormously fat. He's just, you know, heavy set. And still very nice boy. And he was telling me that he had inadvertently gotten into a lot of trouble because someone was going around, you know, forging checks and using his name. And, of course, word got out that he had been put in jail. But it was not he at all. It was someone else using his name. And I said, gee, you know, sometimes you think it doesn't pay to be famous. You get in a lot of trouble.
Well, you know, that happened to Baby Peggy, too. There were three or four Baby Peggies being booked on vaudeville circuits and things during the 20s. Mm-hmm. She's told me about that. And who else? Billy Hallop. Someone told me not too long ago that Billy Hallop was in jail. He's not. He lives in Pacific Palisades. I talked to him on the phone.
Oh, isn't that something?
And even Leo Gorsi thought he was in jail.
Really?
Yes,
really?
Because I said, you see Billy Hallop. He said, Billy Hallop, Billy Hallop's in jail. And I said, no, if he is, he's taking phone calls. Because
isn't that something?
I talked to him on the phone. He was in a picture, oh, I think it was 1967, called Fitz Willie. United Artists released it.
Mm-hmm.
And who was in it? Dick Van Dyke. He plays a chef in it. In fact, I have a still from it. So Billy Hollop is not in jail. Did you work with Porky Don Marlowe?
Yes, I did.
Because I hear from him.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Oh, this is funny. It was probably embarrassed him now, though. But at the time, I think, I don't know. I think I'm a couple of years older than he, because he was like the baby, you know, at the time. But he and I were very close. We enjoyed playing together very much. And he used to call me Doll Baby, rather than Baby Doll. We have a lot of stills, and he was always walking around calling me Doll Baby. So if you see him, would you tell him Doll Baby sends love?
He's promising that he's going to come to New York. If he does, we'll have to have lunch or something.
Oh, I think it would be wonderful. I would love to see him
again. Duluth, Minnesota.
Oh, does he?
Is that where he was from?
Well, no, he was from, actually, I think he was an Oklahoma boy also, or Texas. I know it was Midwest at the time, but of course, now he's doing clubs. He's traveling, and I didn't know where
he was. Hollywood Box number two, and I had an agent. I can't remember how I got in touch with him. Monty Banks, was he?
Monty Banks. Well, I've heard the name, but I don't connect it in any way with the gang.
What about, did Mrs. Gladys Rubin, was she your teacher?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
I hear from
her. Do you really?
Yes. She lives in Palmerston Place in Los Angeles. And she said she doesn't hear from you all like, you know, she'd like to.
You have her address. I'd love to
have it right here.
Good,
we'll
I'll have to copy it down before I go. Yes, her husband, Maury, taught me when we went to California. And played for me on many shows that we did. And then they moved on Sunset Boulevard, and they had a very big studio to teach children, you know, who were in show business. And then he passed away, and they used the property. I forget, they tore it down and built something. You know how, like New York, Hollywood does the same thing. They tear everything old down. And I had wondered what had happened to her, because everyone was quite fond of her.
What about the little Negro boy, Buckwheat?
Now, this is another one that's really kind of rumor-wise. I have heard it from several people, so I assume that it might be true. They said that he has made a career in the Army. Now, whether that is true or not, I don't know, because I don't know anybody that, you know, that knows him or has, you know, actually seen him since. And the time that we had the reunion, he wasn't there. That's the first time that I heard it. They said, well, they couldn't get a hold of him because he was in the Army.
So, did any of the other members, had they heard from him?
No, apparently not. Not at all.
Did you all, along with working together and going to school together, did you play together? Were you friends, too?
Yes. In a little sense of the way, it was kind of rough on me. The way they had it set up, there was a teacher for the gang, Mrs. Fern Carter. She was very beloved. As a matter of fact, she, until she passed away, was the living authority on the gang. She knew where everybody was, because when the original gang started in 1922... and I went in 1936, so before I even went in, there were several different gangs, and they adored her. And whenever they would have extras on the set, they would have another teacher come in just to teach the extras, but she was the primary teacher just for the gang children. And I was the only girl, it was Spanky, Alfalfa, Porky, Buckwheat, and myself. And when recess time would come, the boys would all go play football, and I'd just sit there like a lump on a log, you know, there wasn't anybody to play with. And then when we were on a set with extras, for some reason or other, they kept us away. I mean, we weren't, it was a different world then, you know, there was that star quality that they had in the old days of the movies, that the stars just did not associate with anybody else. You know, you might want to, but you just didn't. The only exception that I can remember made was one filming where there was a little girl who was a midget, but she was dressed as a little girl. The idea of the whole sketch was she was trying to get in with a gang of kids so they wouldn't take her back to the circus and put her in the sideshow. But nobody told me she was a midget. But since she didn't go to school, she sat over, you know, when we went to school, and I played with her, and her name was Olive, and I just loved her. It was so wonderful to have a little girl to play with. Many years later, when I was Ken Murray's leading lady here on CBS in New York, she came on the show and she says, "Do you remember me?" And I didn't remember offhand. And she says, "I'm the little girl you played with." And it was Buster Shaver and Olive, the dance act. He was the big, tall man, and he danced with her. And I didn't realize at the time that I was playing with her and playing paper doll. She was about 27 years old.
As a matter of fact, I remember that picture
that
you made.
Oh, thank you.
It's a midget.
Yeah.
Gee, they were fun. Did you have fun while you were making them?
Oh yes, we did. People say to me, "Well, gee, it's a shame, you know, you had to be brought up that way." But you know, it was the life I knew. I was 3 years old when I started, and I mean, it was just everything was an adventure to me. I never felt that it was work. I loved wearing the costumes. I loved it when we did a Follies and I could sing and dance and wear costumes. And you know how children at home, they'll pretend like they're going to put on a circus or something, you know, and they'll try to implement. Well, when we'd do a show and we were supposed to be putting on a circus, the prop men would give us the tent and everything else. I mean, it was marvelous. It was just great. The only thing is, I got a wild imagination from it. I never was happy just sitting at home after that.
Did they tell you, your director or the scriptwriter, exactly what to do? Was a lot of it improvised?
Primarily, we followed script, and of course, when I went in, I was too young to read, so Mother would read my lines to me, you know, until I had them memorized. However, they were wise enough that if anybody missed a line or if they said something that came out more childish than the grown-up writer might have written it, they would leave it in, and many times, the way it was played out, we would even get off of the subject and go to something else if they felt that it was really better that way, then they would rewrite it and change it. They left open ends, let's put it that way. We tried to follow script, but if it was funnier the way that we would happen to do something, they certainly followed it, and I think that's why they were so successful.
How many of those pictures did you make?
140, 150, something like that. It was a little hard to keep count because after 9 years, you kind of lose count.
Was that the end of the series when after the 9 years?
Well, it was, but it was an accident. It wasn't meant to be. You see, it was during the war. And I don't know how it worked in the East, but in California, they used to, in the movie houses, they used to have one feature, and then they would show a bunch of shorts, you know, cartoons and maybe an Our Gang and a Pete Smith short and a travelogue and the news. During the war, there was trouble getting film, so they cut out the shorts altogether. They were using it strictly for full-length features. During this time, I got to be 12 years old, and I was getting a little taller than the boys and blossoming out, so they decided it would be a good time to let me go, and they did replace me. But they only made one or two after that, and they couldn't get the film at all, so they let it rest. And then following the war, they got this new pitch of showing two full-length features. Therefore, maybe they only show one cartoon and one news, so the days of the shorts literally were out. And I think probably if they hadn't brought them back on television, people wouldn't even remember now, except, you know, maybe the few that did see them in the movie
would
remember. You would have.
Do your kids watch you on the old shows?
Oh, gosh, yes. You know, they take spells. When all of them were old enough to first look at them and realize that it was me, they were terribly impressed. And then after watching them for a while, they get tired and they turn them off. But now they're on. It's a funny thing. They get off of it and then they get back on it. Now they're on it again and they watch and they'll yell at me and they'll say, "Mom, you're on." "Oh, Mom." They say, "Come look at your skirt. Your pants are showing." Because I had those little tiny plaid skirts. It was funny.
Ruffled pants.
Yes. Oh, naturally. My mother designed all my clothes. And, you know, naturally they were specially made. And I used to wear these little plaid wool skirts, but very short. So I wrote her the other day, and I said, "Mom, did you realize you invented the miniskirt and nobody appreciated it then?" But they look just like what the children are wearing today.
Yeah, I thought that. I think the first time I saw, you know, the miniskirt.
Yeah. But I used to wear bell-bottom slacks, which they're wearing now. And, of course, I don't know about little kid gloves. She used to have them made for me. But it's funny how the trend changes. I think that's why, really, they're ageless, because the children today look at them, and they look just like they could have been made today.
Yeah, the children will always be children. children. Always the same way. I think teenagers have changed greatly.
Oh, tremendously.
But not children.
No, that's true. They're still, regardless of how modern the world becomes, they're still... Well, kids pull the same thing. You know, the gang had a charm because they may have overdone things, you know, over-accented certain points, but they used basic things that troubles that kids all get into.
Yes, you know, it's true. I think any child who has any kind of a normal childhood could identify with it.
Exactly.
Completely. You know, a friend of mine called me last week who lives in Hollywood and has an office on Sunset Boulevard, and he didn't give me the details. He was in a hurry or he was worried about the long-distance rate or something. But he told me that he had run into Fat Joe Cobb. Now, that really goes back an hour.
Really? I had thought he passed away.
No. He said he saw him in Will Wright's having a Sunday. I don't know how he recognized him unless someone pointed him out, but this fellow collects autographs and pictures and went over and asked him for the autograph. He said, yes, that's who he was. And after I hung up, I thought, well, now, why didn't I ask him, you know, for his address and what he's doing?
Oh, yes, because I haven't seen him
in
ages.
That must be about 1921 when you said it began.
Yes, well, as a matter of fact, I know Joe because when I got in the gang, they did a bunch of publicity stuff. They brought the original gang back on the lot. They had Mary Kornman, you know, Mary, blonde Mary. They had Johnny Downs, the good-looking one. They had Billy Daniels. He was the one with the freckle face and the red hair. And they had Joe Cobb, and they had the boy, I can't think of his name now, that played Farina. Then they had the modern, the new counterpart. That was Spanky, Alfalfa, Buckwheat, and myself. And I met Joe Cobb then, and they used him when we went up, we made a road tour of the United States, and we went to the different cities, and Joe Cobb came along and was the MC. And he was such a nice fella. He really was a great guy, but of course I haven't seen him since then. This was in, I don't know, 37, 38, something like that.
I can't think of his name, but the man who played Freckles, one of the Freckles, I guess there were a number of them, in the silent version, married Baby Peggy. He was her first husband.
Oh, I didn't know
and
that.
And he has a dance, what is it, the Murray Dance Studios in Riverside, California, you know, where they give dancing lessons.
Oh, is
they're divorced now.
Dancing?
So I think they still keep in touch. Do you see Dickie Moore?
Haven't seen him. As a matter of fact, today the first time I realized that he was in New York, I'll have to give him
a
call.
The Dick Moore public relations firm does very well. He edits Standby magazine for after any AFTRA member would know him.
Oh, that's
He's
marvelous.
Been on this program a couple of times.
Oh, I'll have to give him a call.
Nice man, and I'm pleased to say he's very successful. My guest today, by the way, is Darla Hood, in case anyone tuned in late, who is well remembered for our gang. Did you all associate with other child stars? I mean, would you have known Bobby Breen and Jackie Searle?
Oh, definitely. I'll tell you why. Due to this, you know, the mother clique type of thing. Actually, on our lot, when we were at Hal Roach, we were there, and Freddie Bartholomew was a star, and Bobby Breen, but all different studios. But whenever anybody would have a birthday, you would invite all the other child stars to the party. You know, it was a way of getting publicity, and... many times we would do benefits. I remember in those days polio was a pretty rough thing, and we used to give performances, and we would all sing if we could or dance or play the piano. We even met Shirley Temple that way, as a matter of fact, when she made Bluebird of Happiness. I know
superstar.
She did one of the spots.
Superstar.
And Janie Withers. My gosh, you know, we knew everybody out there. As a matter of fact, I saw Fred Bartholomew not too long ago, and I took him a picture, which he had not... He's never seen himself. Dick Jones, at the time, was a child star in Hollywood, not to magnitude maybe some of the others. And then later on, he got in that series, oh, gosh, I can't think of that, Range Rider. And he was Range Rider's sidekick, Dick West. And he was in that for many years on TV. But he used to do a lot of the cowboy pictures. So he had a cowboy party on the RKO lot, and everybody had to come dressed in cowboy clothes. And we have a picture of us all standing on the stage singing. Edith Fellows is there, Fred Bartholomew, part of the Dead End Kids, you know, the East Side Gang. Oh, golly, who else was on there?
Marsha Mae Jones, Cora Sue Collins.
Marsha Mae Jones. No, Cora Sue wasn't there, but I do know Cora Sue. And,
she's in Houston, I understand.
Oh, is she not?
Bobby last Breen told me that.
Well, the last I saw her was in 1950. I played the Riverside Hotel in Reno. And at the time, Cora Sue was married to one of the hotel owners up there, quite a wealthy man. And, of course, Marsha Mae Jones is at all the places. And Gloria Jean. Remember Gloria Jean, the singer?
I'd love to know where she is.
Oh. Well, I'm sure she's in Hollywood. I'm sure you could get a hold of her. Let me see now. It's been...
She did a picture with
Five
Barry
years.
Lewis.
5 years. Lucy, yeah. Restaurant in California, gave a big party for all the people of the silent films and the early 30s. And I was there representing the gang, and Gloria Jean was there representing. And Jane Darwell, remember old Jane Darwell?
She
was there.
About yes. 9 months.
And Reginald Denny was there. He also passed away recently. And Jack Oakey. But it was really a fun get-together. But that's the first time I had seen Gloria Jean, and she's still living in the Hollywood area.
Well, she was working as a hostess in a restaurant in the Valley.
That's right. Just about that time.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And then Jerry Lewis, I think, saw her and gave her a part in one of his pictures, and evidently nothing happened.
Nothing happened, I guess, from there.
Yeah. Who else has been on that you would... You would know Susanna Foster.
Yes, so now...
She's probably a little bit older
yes,
than you.
Yes, I never actually met Susanna, but I do recall she was out there working. Well, when we went to... See, Hal Roach sold the gang to MGM, and we ended up working at MGM. And then this was rather a sad thing. They decided that it was ridiculous to be paying a teacher to teach the 5 members of the gang when MGM had a teacher on the lot teaching... you know, the other contract players. So they let Miss Carter go. It was such a sad thing because she really, I think, would have stayed to the bitter end with her gang because she loved them all. But then we went into a classroom that Margaret O'Brien was in, so I know Margaret, and Elizabeth Taylor was in it, and Connie Russell. I don't know if you remember Connie Russell. She sang on the Garraway Show. She was a senior in high school at the time. And all the contract players, the ones that became something and the ones that...
The little boy who played Tom Sawyer, I'm trying to think of his name.
He's a good-looking boy. I can't think of his name.
Isn't that awful? I cannot think of his name. But he is superintendent of athletic activities in Santa Ana, California. Come on, help me.
Tommy Bond.
No, Tommy Kelly.
Oh, Tommy Kelly.
Tommy Kelly.
Well, you know, I had Tommy Bond on my mind because Tommy Bond is working for a local station, television station in Los Angeles. He's head of property, and I've done a couple of guest spots there. And it's strange he's turning around. I think it's KLAC.
I've never been. I've worked for a couple of them.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure it's KLAC.
Now, I'm trying to think of another one. Who was the little English boy who played in Goodbye, Mr. Chip? Was so good, kind of plump. Made a number of pictures, and he worked for MGM.
Oh, I know who you mean, but I can't think of his name.
I'm having a block on
like
names
a Cupid
today.
Face.
Yeah. Awfully good little actor.
Yes, he was.
Lives with his mother in Santa Monica. He's not married. And the Mock Twins.
Oh, yes.
Did you
what
know
happened
the Mock
to them?
Twins? You must have had a crush on them. They were the best-looking kids in Hollywood.
Absolutely. Handsome.
Billy and Bobby Mock. One lives in wherever the nation's 46th country hospital is, Woodson Hills. And the other one lives in Sherman Oaks. And the one is married and has several children. The other one is divorced. They're both film cutters.
Are they really?
One's at Warner, which was their home lot. The other one's freelancing.
Oh, I just thought of somebody else. Benita Granville. She's done
pretty
well.
That's very well. She's married a lovely
mother.
Lovely
mother.
Jack Rather Million.
Yeah. Yeah, she was on the Ken Murray Show when I was. Well, I ran into so many people when I was on that show because he would have them on, you know, as guest stars, and we'd always ended up making some kind of a skit out of it.
He loves nostalgia. He has
does he ever? But he's got some marvelous films. He's really, he's so smart that when he was young, in the young days in Hollywood, that he began making them because he had
no one.
You couldn't get them.
No.
You know, people try to buy them from him.
No one was doing that.
No.
It's really, really quite amazing. Now, what if your kids, we've got a few minutes left. What if your kids wanted to be in show business? Would you mind at all?
I wouldn't mind, but I'll tell you one thing that I wouldn't do, because I've seen too much unhappiness caused by it, is a parent taking a child and pushing a child into show business because the parent feels frustrated that maybe they could have done something. I think that a child has to show talent and show an inclination. And I think going in, I realize there have to be child actors and actresses, but it does make it difficult adjustment, you know, when you grow up, and I've seen it happen. Even as we're discussing, so many of the people, for a while, you sort of feel like you're a misfit, and then you finally find a slot that you can, you know, call your own. But I wouldn't push them. But I think if they get to be teenagers and they want to do it, and I think in any field, I mean, doctors, lawyers, anything, you've got to really want to do it. And if the mother and father go along with them, that's great. I wouldn't push him, though.
You certainly shouldn't feel frustrated. You're certainly well-remembered. You're doing commercials.
Oh, yes. Well, I work all the time now, so it just, you know, ended up being an education for me that I can use now for the rest of my life, and it's a lot of fun.
So, anyway, my thanks today to Darla Hood, member of our gang from 1936 to, 1945. Been a lot of fun.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted you asked me. I've enjoyed sitting back reminiscing.
And I hope you'll all be listening again next week when we find out whatever became of Ruth Donnelly. Until next week, at the same time, this is Richard Lamparski. Thank you for listening. Good night.